Welcome to the Faded Spade Podcast with your hosts, Tom Wheaton and Sean McCormick.
Thanks for joining another episode of the Faded Spade Podcast. My name is Tom Wheaton, founder and CEO of Faded Spade, with the co-host with the most, the poker boss, Sean McCormick. What's up, man?
Yeah, buddy. Dude, I'm excited about our guest today. This guy's done some cool stuff. You know what's really cool is that, you know, we got Andrew today, and Andrew is kind of like the innovator of these meetup games and like going into casinos and doing play-by-play hands and stuff like that. So there's kind of like this cool, interesting dynamic where it's like, I'm an operator. He's a guy doing something that we've always been told, you can't do this in casinos. Yet here we are having him on the podcast to talk about his story. And it's pretty cool because he's so much more than just the meetup game. So I think people will be very interested.
Isn't that true? I mean, when you think about what he's done, you know, in his career, you know, starting off in the music industry and then obviously transitioning to poker, everyone will hear that story. And then deciding to start up these vlogs, which obviously over 125,000 subscribers now on YouTube. And then he gets into the apparel game with Favorable. And then he's getting into even more things that you'll hear about on the podcast. It's like, good for him, man. And what I took out of this was he just loves and has a passion, not just for poker, but just for everything he does. He's so passionate about it. And it means a lot to him when fans and followers kind of recognize the value in what he's doing. And I think that keeps him going. And I don't think he realizes that he is the influencer that he truly is in the poker industry. But he is. And then you add on that the meetup games. I mean, the sky is the limit for Andrew and where he wants to take his business endeavors, man.
For sure. For sure. And I always can appreciate someone that is just hungry for more. And, you know, Andrew is that guy. He's without even knowing it. I don't even think, like, I think the greatest innovators and entrepreneurs in the world don't even realize how hungry they are. Like, they just, they don't have a sleep button. They're just constantly going. And the sky's the limit for Andrew for sure. And I'm not only excited that we have him on, but I'm excited to see what he does next.
No doubt. So stay tuned for that Founder Hour interview with Andrew Niemi. And then also right after that, we have a really cool segment about meetup games and what they mean for the industry. And as from a player perspective, operator perspective, poker room perspective, you name it. So stay tuned for that. But before we jump in, Shawnee boy, what a wild weekend, man. Not just in the industry, but also NFL starts. I mean, how was your weekend, Mr. Patriots fan? Go ahead and brag about it. Get it out.
You know, it's business as usual. You know, at this point, you're supposed to be humble. No, I will say this, though. I will say this. When they released the sixth banner, and I'm looking at the first one starting in 2001, and I'm looking at last year's banner, Super Bowl, all the six Super Bowl banners, I looked at it and I was like, damn, I get why people hate us.
So let me ask you a question. Do you have one in 2007?
Wow.
Do you have one in 2011? No.
What have you done for me lately?
You're right. I mean, the Giants got destroyed by the Cowboys. Eli didn't look bad. I mean, they didn't look bad. They just, the Cowboys looked really good. Like, really good. I'm worried about them this year, man. Could be seeing a Cowboys, Patriots, Saints, Patriots type Super Bowl. Maybe the Giants go 8-8, whatever. So yeah, big opening NFL weekend, man. So how about the poker world? We had some news in the poker world, man.
We did. First and foremost, I think the biggest news of the week, Mr. Justin Hammer is no longer at Commerce. He cut ties with them. And honestly, I think that's a bigger loss for Commerce than it is for Justin. Obviously, Justin's a premier tournament director in the industry, a well-respected tournament director, and he's going to be able to write his own ticket wherever he goes for sure. You know, he's obviously, he came from Aria, and now he's got Commerce under his belt. So, I mean, what's next for Justin Hammer? So, we'll all have to be on the lookout for that. I don't know where he'll go, and who knows? Maybe he'll take his act globally. Maybe he'll land in Florida or somewhere else in California, or maybe even back in Vegas, who knows, but we wish him all the luck and best wishes. But yeah, that's a huge, huge one. Cause from everything I've seen over the last couple of years, he's been the guy, the instrumental piece at Commerce. And I can tell you why I know that. I can't name one other person at Commerce anymore. Obviously Savage does a lot of things for Commerce, but outside of that, like on the ground, you know, boots on the ground guy every single day. The only one I knew was Justin Hamber. Anybody else that was there is now gone. So it's just interesting. I don't know what Commerce is thinking. They are they cleaning house, or are they, you know, trying to change their philosophy on tournament poker? I don't know. I don't have enough contacts there, but it's an interesting move for them to cut ties, and you know, we'll see what's next for Justin.
And we'll have to have Justin on at some point. Obviously, you know, Matt's going to be coming on at some point too, but just to hear, maybe not that whole story, you know, what they can share, but more just about, you know, the state of tournaments and poker industry today, and to even learn their career journeys. And especially from Matt's standpoint, even his entrepreneurial story, I think will be awesome for the podcast. So we'll work on having both Justin and Matt on, but I agree, you know, big loss for the Commerce. And the reason why it's a big loss is because Justin is, you know, one of the more well-known tournament managers in the industry, and Commerce is the biggest poker room in the world, right? 100%. So we'll see what happens there. Other than that, man, how was the rest of your weekend, bud?
My weekend was good. You know, it's pretty relaxing right now here in Vegas. Obviously, Labor Day weekend starts to ramp things back up. And of course, week one of football. You know, my room's been extremely busy, which is awesome to see. We seem to be holding the number one and number two spot for most cash games in Las Vegas pretty consistently. Which is awesome, you know, especially since we're not the biggest room. And yeah, it's been great. Everybody's excited about football. Everybody's you know, getting their sports bets in. So, you know, we all understand how sports and poker go kind of hand in hand. So it's great to see a lot of players that I haven't seen in a while. And you know, this type of action is great for everybody. But maybe I should start playing more.
Yeah. Well, speaking of playing more, I actually went out for the first time in a couple months and played at Orange City Poker Room. There are two poker rooms in Central Florida that I recommend to anybody: Daytona Beach and Orange City. High quality rooms. They're run really great. Dom, Rich, and just an unbelievable fun rooms with a great atmosphere. And I finally got back out to the cash game tables, man. Had a great session. But, you know, I didn't go to fold after not playing for 2 months. So there were some crazy hands for sure. But it was just awesome to hit the felt again. Orange City and Daytona are on the path to become Faded Spade card customers. So really happy about that. But yeah, great weekend here too, man. Excited the NFL is up and running. And then we get to give each other shit every podcast about whether or not the Patriots or Giants win or lose. So there you go.
Yes, sir. Fun fact, actually, I'm sure some of the listeners know this already, but Daytona Beach is my break-in room.
Yeah.
It was my first poker room ever to officially pitch a card outside of like a home game where we pass the deck around or something like that. And actually, when I dealt for Daytona Beach, I lived in Orange City, which is kind of funny. Wow. That they now have a poker room. So I'm going to have to definitely get out there sometime and check it out. Because now there's a second reason to go to Orange City. You know, obviously the poker room, but the one that everybody should know is Zaxby's. Is Zaxby's still a thing in Florida? I mean, their chicken is delicious.
It's gross. What are you talking about?
Come on. Well, I was like,
oh, wait, hold on. We want Zaxby's to be a sponsor. Zaxby's is delicious fast food chicken.
Oh, man.
You know what? We just need to get into this interview with Nimi.
You killed our sponsorship opportunity there, buddy. We, you know, we could have just sold it as Zaxby's is the third chicken sandwich to Chick-fil-A and Popeyes.
Chick-fil-A all the way, man.
Podcast brought to you by Popeyes.
Chick-fil-A. We'll also now be in touch following this podcast for sponsorship opportunities.
All right, Tom. So, obviously, people need to know where to find this. Yes. How do you find this podcast? Yes. You know, we're having a lot of fun, but we got to get people to know where it is.
You're right. So any podcast platform that you listen to virtually, whether it's Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it, it's the Faded Spade podcast. We actually created a brand new YouTube channel where we post videos of the podcast. So you can find us on YouTube. And then on fadedspade.com, we have a whole podcast section. You can see the videos. You can hear the audio. You have links to everywhere that it's housed. And then, as we'll continually do, code podcast at fadedspade.com will get you 15% off any order of the preferred cards of the World Poker Tour. So that's where they can find us. And that's an incentive for our listeners as well.
Hey, guys, and if you send me a check for $499, I will put this podcast on a cassette tape, and I'll even include a pencil so that you can rewind your cassette tape. That's for the old guys there. You know, the young guys won't get that one, but the old guys will.
And if you believe that, they are also building a high-speed monorail from Miami to Disneyland. All right, let's jump into this Founder Hour interview with Andrew Niemi. I think you guys will enjoy it as much as we did. Unbelievable entrepreneurial career journey. And then stay tuned for a really cool segment about meetup games. Here we go, Sean. Andrew Niemi, Founder Hour, Faded Spade Podcast. Away we go.
Let's do it.
Founder Hour.
All right, welcome to the Faded Spade Podcast Founder Hour. As we just mentioned, with our special guest of the day, Mr. Andrew Niemi. Andrew, what's up, man?
How's it going, guys? Great to be here with you.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Thanks for coming on. So, look, I just want to run down a few things before we go through here of all the things that I've kind of seen as like entrepreneurial that you're doing, right? Because, again, this is sharing your entrepreneurial kind of business story. But vlogs. Right? Over 130,000 subscribers on YouTube. Is that right? Yep.
On YouTube, we're at like 125, but if you want to call it 130, that's fine.
We'll round up for you. Then you got podcasts and you got mugs and you have your own apparel company with Favorable. And on, you know, in addition to all that, yeah, you play poker, right? So
that's right.
My question is, like, when do you sleep, dude?
That's a very good question, man. Sleeping is definitely, it's important. I try to not really cut out sleep like altogether or really put too big of a dent into it. There's definitely times where my sleep schedule there's probably better words you could find rather than schedule, because it's for sure all over the place. There's been many nights and into mornings where I just, you know, was on the edit grind. And for some reason, I've always, you know, when I'm making these videos, it's been just powering through each episode rather than like breaking it into chunks. So there's been many 10 a.m. mornings where I've been editing a video all through the night and just trying to get it up by the next morning. But yeah, I try to cut out other things rather than sleep. I've always been one to get a good 9, 10 hours after a long all nighter. To cut out some of the things.
That stopped for me after kids, bro. But all right, so let's go through this journey of yours, right? So take us to kind of Andrew, kind of growing up, and kind of what you did or where you thought your life was going in terms of what you want to do for a career or education or et cetera, kind of before you got into poker and started all these businesses and really built your personal brand. So share that story.
Okay. Well, as I grew up in Michigan, went to Michigan State University, and pretty much all through that time at Michigan State, I was a telecommunications major, which, you know, it's, you learn a little bit about a lot of different things. You're not really specialized and you cover a lot of different topics. So basically, to your question, I had no idea what I thought I was going to do. There's lots of different directions you can go with that degree. You look at things like cell phones, technology. You look at everything from radio to motion picture production to, I did get a bit of work in on a video editing software for maybe 2 weeks out of the 5 years that I was at Michigan State. But no real idea. And at the end of that degree, I think a lot of people end up doing either an internship or their master's in some in some direction so that they're more prepared and specialized in something. And I ended up doing an internship in London, England at a music promotion company. And I was like, yeah, I like music. I don't know what I want to do. Let's go work for a music company, a company in the music industry. And ended up working at a really cool company that was very small. It was only the two founders of the company, maybe another employee and myself. And they had an awesome roster of bands and clients that were record labels that that they worked with. And I got a lot of hands-on experience working for a super small company like that. Stayed in London until my work visa was expired. So they hired me after the internship was over. And this is, you know, well before poker. I'm not doing anything poker related. I don't even remember a hand of poker that I played well after this. So I did that. I was in London and loved my time there. But eventually work visa expires, can't get another one, and have to come back to the U.S., end up in Los Angeles, still chasing the music industry dream, but not really finding any jobs that I enjoyed as much as I enjoyed at that company in London. So I kind of bounced around a little bit, and again, not really sure, you know, which direction exactly I wanted to go. But this is in the year, let's see, I came back to the US in like 2004, and you know, poker is just starting to really happen worldwide, and you know, especially with Moneymaker here in the US and all over television here in the US. So you know, I discovered poker when I got back here, and my little brother, he had the online poker client up and running, and I hopped onto that, and you know, was super recreational player for as you are for quite some time, especially when you're working a job and you're not like actually thinking about professional poker in any sense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was super recreational player for a good 4 years. But as I kind of lost interest in music, and as poker was, you know, continually getting bigger and bigger, started playing more and more, discovered that you can, increase your win rate through studying. You can do better for yourself. You can move up in stakes and make more money. And just, you know, was on that path and slowly ramped up the poker as the jobs were kind of winding down and the economy was winding down as well into 2007, 2008. And, the job sort of became part-time and the poker became more and more full-time as the one was ramping down, the other was ramping up.
So did you make an intentional decision to like leave a job and then just go transition to poker full-time? Or was it one of those things like for me, I lost the job, like, was it one of those things where you were in between jobs or lost a job? Or did you just say, you know what, I want to do poker full time and this is what I'm going to do, and away we go?
Yeah, it was kind of really ideal because the job I was at, the company I was at, as the economy was starting to slow down, a couple of projects that were supposed to happen that I was, you know, kind of that I had discussed with my boss, they ended up not coming through due to the economy. And, you know, I was kind of bouncing around in online poker a little bit. I was trying, you know, I tried Full Tilt, tried Poker Stars. Eventually I found this other site called Bugsy's Club that was much smaller and just, you know, a total gold mine basically. Really? And I was able to start in the micro stakes and run it up. So while all that economy stuff was happening, the job literally became part-time. My hours got cut and that meant more time for poker. Mm-hmm. And then the job became freelance, which meant working from home on some of their projects, but mainly playing online poker. Mm-hmm. And eventually they were like, okay, well, if anything comes up, we'll let you know. But, you know, there's not a whole lot happening here right now. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'm playing a lot more online poker and it's actually going like really well. I was managed to move up in stakes from online poker, in the micro stakes of online poker from like 2 cent, 4 cent, up to like a healthy 5-10 no limit online roll. And at that point, you know, again, online poker was just in full steam ahead. Just so many different shows that were on television all over the place. Granted, Vegas, you know, wasn't the economy thing hit Vegas pretty hard, but as far as I knew, I wasn't really paying a ton of attention to that. I was just kind of focused on grinding and like all these tournaments that kept happening all over the place and all these poker shows that were on TV and the fact that I was actually finding some success with this online poker thing. So yeah.
Were you making more money doing that than your past jobs?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
100%.
Yeah. It really only took like after discovering that, that site and, you know, of course I was, you know, as time went on, I was, you know, doing a little bit of, I wouldn't call it study. Obviously things were a lot easier back then, but you know, looking in the poker forums and reading hands and posting a couple of hands here and there, obviously you're going to get a little bit better. So, you know, I was starting to get a little bit better at this thing and just, yeah, I don't know if you would call that falling into it or, you know, the circumstances falling into place or whatever, but it was a pretty slow ramp into that. But then it was like a year from, you know, sort of discovering that site and starting at the bottom into, you know, a healthy 5-10 roll for online poker.
Damn, I still don't have a 5-10 roll, Andrew. All right. So, okay. So, I
mean, there was definitely some, I mean, the next step, you know, it's not all rosy from there on out. So trust me, it's fine.
So when did you transition to live poker at all during this time? Were you doing both or was it just a clean cut? Like I'm doing online and then eventually I'll do live.
So mainly I was just playing online. This is, you know, I was living in Los Angeles a little bit. It's obviously so much more convenient online poker versus driving through Los Angeles traffic to get to the casinos. But yeah, I went to the Hustler. That was my favorite spot in LA. Went to the Bike once or twice. Went to Commerce. Didn't see the appeal too much, but understand it now. And so I was going to the casinos a few times here and there, but mainly the online grinds.
Okay. And how did Black Friday affect you?
So this is Black Friday happened after I moved to Vegas. Shortly after the work that at my last job was basically done with, I'd actually broken up with the girl that I was living with, a girl in LA, and it was very amicable. We were just kind of like going in different directions, and she moved back east where she was from, and I was like, I kind of want to go check out Las Vegas full time. I had been in LA for like 4 years and probably made about 20 trips to Vegas over that time. Just always loved Las Vegas. Saw it as sort of like, you know, a big office of opportunity, and was always sad to leave every time it was time to go back home. So cost of living, obviously way less than LA was. And just decided to sort of make that trip and make it a permanent one. And the other thing that happened around the same time was that this site I was playing on, the traffic sort of died out. And I don't know if they're having, you know, fund issues, but the payments became extremely slow from the site. And I was able to get all my money off. There's no, you know, sad story there, but I think that site eventually got bought out by PokerStars. If you can, you can like poke around and try and find out some history of that site. But eventually moved out to Vegas, and I kind of wanted to do the same thing I did online, and which was just start in the low stakes and grind my way up and make sure I was, you know, doing things correctly, and rather than just jumping into high stakes, you know, when I didn't have nearly as many hours playing live as I had in that that online site. And okay, that's what we did. We moved out to Vegas and started playing some low stakes poker.
So was it like around this time where you started thinking like you wanted to actually do something in the vlog space, or was there other type of entrepreneurial things you were doing along the way? Like when did that whole transition happen from online to live to really starting what you are really known for today in the industry?
Yeah, there is a huge gap there. There's a bunch of years, probably the biggest number of years in the whole story. So I was grinding on live poker here in Vegas for a good 8 years before I started the vlog. And there was definitely some struggles there. You know, this is like I moved to Vegas when I was just turning 29. Mm-hmm. So a young man in his late 20s, poker player who sort of thinks he knows what he's doing, but poker is also very easy at the time, and is in a brand new city that is always easy to find some fun. Not really the best recipe for success for me. Spent a lot of time doing things like, you know, going out to the bars and stuff with friends, and not as much time at the poker tables and studying. And, you know, eventually poker starts to get a little bit harder. People figure things out, and it's not quite the breeze that it always was in the previous decade. So, yeah, I sort of spun my wheels for probably a good couple of years. I mean, I was beating the low stakes games, but I was spending more than I was making and not putting nearly enough hours as I should have been. Lots of other mistakes along the way too. So eventually sort of got on track and found some other people that were kind of looking to do the same thing, kind of improve their game and move up into, you know, from 1-3 to 2-5 to 5-10. And did a lot of, you know, sort of study sessions. We had a text message group that I've talked about in videos and stuff, but just 24 hours a day of talking hands and, you know, round and round, you wake up to like 200 text messages, read all those and go grind. And so I figured that out, but, you know, started the vlogs in October of 2016 and, you know, I moved to Vegas about 8 years before that. Mm-hmm. I had done a couple of sort of media projects, before that. I started a podcast with a couple of guys, Dan Mahalski and Dave Ferrara. We started a podcast called Vegas Grinders, which is mm-hmm. like, you know, we each brought something different to the table. I was really the only, full-time grinder. And they were, they're both writers. They're great writers. We did like, I want to say 20 to 30 episodes of that, had a little cult following maybe, but nothing really grew beyond that. And
can people find those anywhere?
Vegas Grinders, I think, is still on iTunes. I would have to go check and see. I'm not positive. It's out there somewhere, I'm pretty sure.
Do you want people to find them?
It's cool. Yeah. it was a pretty enjoyable thing. It's not like, you know, I was still playing mainly like 1-3, I think at the time, maybe some 2-5. And, it was cool. We tried to like, you know, for people who were coming into Vegas, like for a weekend or something, and tried to tell them, you know, these are the promotions that are going on in different rooms. These are our favorite rooms. You know, this is a new bar or club that opened up recently. Check this out. Or like, you know, some news story that's happening in the poker world as well, and mesh all that together and then throw a hand history in too. So Actually somewhat similar, you know, to the vlog, you know, talked a little bit about all those different things. But yeah, didn't start firing up the blog until October of 2016.
Okay. So before we get into that story, the start of the vlog, right? What advice would you have for people who are in Vegas now or maybe thinking about it, or maybe it's Florida, maybe it's another state, right? Who are like, look, you know what? I'm going to try and do this poker grind like full time. What advice would you have for them that you wish you would have told like your younger self when you were going through it?
Yeah. That's a great question. For me, there's a few things, as far as like just getting started in the poker grind, you definitely want to do some networking, with other poker professionals. Whether that's people that are at your level or probably preferably a level above you in terms of the stakes that you're playing. To have both of those things is very ideal so that you can, you know, share hand histories with each other, get an outsider's view on what you're doing right and wrong. And you have to be open to those criticisms, of course, but that's something I didn't do for a little while. It was kind of, you know, Vegas, there's always friends coming into town. So it was kind of like doing my own thing and hanging out with people that weren't poker players for a while. So that's important. My other mistake was I was spending too much money. So you, especially, you know, in the low stakes, you're never going to get off that treadmill if you don't minimize all of your dollars that are going out. So you have to look at it as a business. You know, you have to minimize your costs and be very diligent about that. Those are probably the two main things I would tell myself. And then you really just have to prioritize the grind of poker. You know, you got to be putting in a lot of hours. You want to shoot for, I don't know, 150 hours, I think minimum would probably be ideal, which doesn't really sound like that much if there's, you know, people are working 40 plus hours a week, but poker can be pretty draining, as we know. So those are the three main tips.
Great tips, man. And hey, if anyone's thinking about doing that, listen to Andrew. He's lived it. And he's gone on to still be a very successful poker player, but now a whole range of businesses, you know, starting with obviously your vlog and building your personal brand. So talk to us about that, Andrew. So did you just kind of fall into that? Like you were talking about falling into other things, or did you say, this is something I really want to do. I'm going to figure out how to do it. And let me just give it a shot. Like, how did that all come about?
Yeah. So I had discovered a guy who was making mainstream YouTube videos every single day, a guy by the name of Casey Neistat. And he's by far and away like my biggest influence with these videos. Mm. And, you know, he's a professional filmmaker who took his craft into daily YouTube vlogs, and they're awesome. And he also talked a lot about the platform of YouTube and just how cool it is that you can, you do it all yourself, and you connect directly with your audience, and, you know, there's no middleman and it's all on you. And, at the same time, again, this was like 8 years after I'd moved to Vegas, and, lots of, you know, grinding, you know, you could say 8 years in, you know, two words, but 8 years is a long time to just play cards and not do a whole lot else. You know, you can definitely get burnt out in that time, and you don't have too much to show for it other than the, you know, the uptick or the downtick in your bankroll and your net worth, which for a lot of people, that's awesome. That's really cool. They don't need anything else, but I felt like I was missing a little bit of maybe creativity or something else to show for it. So like between myself being maybe a little bit either burnt out or tired, or just, you know, looking for something different, looking to add a little bit something to my my work, and discovering this new medium and this platform of YouTube, and also seeing that, you know, the games at the time that were really being focused on by the media, which is understandable, is, you know, the high stakes nosebleed games. You know, people were always excited about those. Even like tournaments like the Main Event is $10,000 to buy into. A lot of these games or tournaments are, you know, things that the vast majority of the poker playing fans are games that are they're never going to play in these games. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole segment out there that are playing different games, you know, the everyday sort of 1-2, 2-5, even 5-10 is a little bit up there for a lot of these people. So saw the platform of YouTube, saw what this Casey guy was doing with videos, saw that there could be a little bit something that you could apply for this medium into the poker world, and then have Vegas as a backdrop, and started to talk into a camera and see what happens.
Were you all self-taught? Did you teach yourself everything about YouTube? And did you like write your own kind of plans and segments for each vlog, or did you kind of get that? Were you inspired, you know, by that from somewhere else?
I'm self-taught. It's the cool thing about YouTube is that, you know, it's the same platform that you are posting the stuff to is a learning platform, and you can, any question that you have, you just type that into this YouTube thing, and you'll find, you know, 10, 20, 30 people who can answer your question. And, there's a lot of, you know, figuring that stuff out, is between the filming and the editing in particular, and figuring out these editing platforms. But it's all self-taught. But there was probably also like a handful of months where I thought about starting this, you know, this project and making a vlog and applying some of the things that I was watching into a poker vlog. You know, you don't just have this idea one day and then turn on a camera and suddenly make it. So mm-hmm. There's a process of, I think this could be something, but maybe it'll be stupid, but maybe I should do it anyway. And actually, it might be kind of cool. I think it's a reasonable idea. So you go back and forth. And I did that for months. And I was like, I think I really need to fire up this vlog thing. I think I really need to do this. Yeah. And finally the day came around where I went to, you know, again, went on YouTube. What's the best vlogging camera? Went to the camera store, bought that camera. I don't really write out the scenes for the vlog or whatever, but there was definitely a bunch of ideas that I thought I could implement.
That's so cool. Like we were talking with both Jamie and Berkey about that type of thing, where it's like, you've had these ideas for what you want to do. How long did you have them before you start to execute? Right. And I was the same way. Like Faded Spade was an idea for 4 years before it was an actual real company. So what pushed you over the edge, man? When were you like, screw it, I'm doing this. And then like, what was that moment? And then after you launched like your first episode, like what was going through your mind?
Yeah. It was just kind of like out of necessity for me. It was like, I just need to do something else. I mean, there's many sessions of poker where I was just kind of sitting there and literally just being like, I don't know if this is for me. Many times I would come home with my to my fiance and say, I don't know what I should be doing. Should I do this? What should I do with myself? You know, those, all those questions on the couch. She probably got sick of me asking that and just probably said, go start this vlog thing.
Shout out to Boosie.
There you go. Shout out to Boosie. So yeah, there's all those questions and stuff. But yeah, eventually just sick of like asking the same question over and over, and you just got to go get out there and try this thing. And if it doesn't work out, it's fine. And, you know, nothing, it's not the end of the world. And we can talk more about that, but the first episode, yeah, it was fun. It took me 2 full days to edit that one, because my first editing, my first video, and, you know, asking all these questions into the YouTubes and getting responses from, you know, all these people out there. And, it was cool. It was fun. Obviously there's like been a lot of progression in the production of it since that first episode. And there's some cringy things that I can look back on in that episode, but, it was fun because we started it. I live in downtown Las Vegas and I sort of wanted to capture some of downtown Vegas in that first one. And it was, I posted it, obviously nerve wracking. What is this going to be like remotely worthwhile for anyone to watch? And then, you get a few comments here and there and you take that feedback and see what people say.
What drives you to keep it going? Obviously, like, your growth has been tremendous, right? 2016 to now. And obviously you talked about how it's evolved from then until now. So share, like, how has it evolved from then till now? How have you evolved? And like, what keeps you motivated to keep wanting to grow this thing and do it?
Yeah. Well, talk about the motivation first. The comments there that I just mentioned, it's, you know, the feedback is really super important. You know, if you're just posting the thing and nobody's seeing it and you're not hearing anything about it, is a lot different from when you post something and they say, hey, that was a really cool blog, you should make another one. And just hearing that from one person when you start a project is massive. It's that fuel that you need to make the next video and then the next video. And you know, poker is an interesting little world that we have here. It's pretty small. It's very connected though. And I think people share things very frequently, whether that's, you know, news in the poker world or content or gossip or strategy. People share things, things get around the poker world pretty quickly. So the vlog, I think, got posted, you know, the usual spots, 2+2, probably a couple other forums, and, you know, shared amongst friends and stuff. So yeah, it took off pretty quick. And then that feedback comes in pretty quickly as a result. And to hear that people were getting something out of it and digging it. Of course, there's, you know, the trolls that had come along as well. And that's, you know, tilting always. But the positive was outweighing the negative pretty decently. And then that's, you know, definitely fueled it to do the next one. And it's not like, okay, that was a total waste of time. I guess I'll not do that anymore. So yeah, that was definitely helpful. There's definitely some progression. You know, when I was first making these videos, for like the hands, I wasn't doing the same sort of level of hand discussion that I do these days. And I didn't even have graphics, you know, like I still don't really know how to go about making graphics, but I was posting these videos with, you know, like text. It was like for like the 10 of clubs, it was T, capital T, little C, right? So that's, you know, not very user friendly for a lot of people that don't understand all this jargon. Right. But after making like a handful of videos, somebody reached out to me who makes he works in like the video production for, I believe, the Cleveland Browns, and he's like, hey, I think I can help you out a little bit with these videos, make it a little bit more presentable, and they can make you some graphics, like a graphic overlay that they do for, like, you know, the WSOP or, you know, any poker show. I was like, awesome. You know, he didn't want any money for it either, so I was like, even better.
That's great.
You know, people, when they see something that they are enjoying and they get some value out of them, they think they can contribute to it and make it even better. It's really cool when people reach out and connect in that way. So now we have graphics. We have graphics on the blog, the poker blog. So yeah, little things like that. And then just my presentation, it's a little bit more, you know, better paced, but back then it was very slow. If I go back and watch those videos, there's like all these sections that I would, you know, chop out from my speaking. I I kind of want to be like, all right, buddy, get to the point, get to the next card, get to the next hand. So, you know, stuff like that. You learn as you go.
Yeah. Amen. So, well, shoot, we're going to get you some Faded Spade cards as graphics to use, man. I'll get you all the PNGs. So, okay. So during this time when you're growing your vlog, right? How important and critical was the support from your fiance?
Awesome. I mean, 100%. It's been that way for, it's been that way since before the vlog. It was that way for, you know, years where poker was not going that great. And I credit her a lot with sort of discovering what a proper work ethic looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, she's from South Africa. She definitely does not come from a lot, and she's been beyond awesome. And, so yeah, I learned a lot from her, and her support, is, you know, continues to be like a sort of secret weapon for me.
There you go. And now you two have a podcast together, right?
That's right. Yeah, we got Tell's podcast that we are approaching our 100th episode. It's quietly enough. We've been having a discussion every week, just about every week, for, you know, 30 minutes to an hour about whatever's going on in our lives, poker or love life, or, you know, maybe some poker news mixed in here and there, but just a chat, a casual chat. You know, with all these projects going on, it's good to sit down and have a chat for 45 minutes with each other.
Love it. And it almost forces you guys to do that, right? Because I'm sure you're both so busy. It's like time for yourselves, but it's also, you know, content that other people can relate to, especially if it's folks who work with their spouse or work with their fiance. I'm sure there's a lot people can relate to. So definitely check that out.
That's right. Tell's podcast. That was the impetus. It was just to sit down and have a chat with each other for 45 minutes a week, and we'll just record it and go from there. And then we have a podcast.
I love it, man. All right. So your vlog is growing. It's continuing to grow. You've established yourself as really an influencer in the industry, right, Andrew? You've built your personal brand, and then all of a sudden you get into apparel, right? And right. Favorable. So every time I've talked to you about that, especially run it up when I met you in person, like this huge smile comes over your face. So talk to everybody about Favorable, how that started and what the vision is for it.
Yeah, it's, you know, so the word Favorable, it just, you know, I said it in one video, felt like it definitely fit when I was talking about a hand, you know, there's the flop was Favorable, you know, for my hand, just perfect word for, you know, a run out or something like that. So I used it again, and then I used it again, and no one was really, you know, using that word, you know, they might use it occasionally, but no one's using it repeatedly over and over again, but it just fits like so perfectly. And it's, you know, it's positive, and it's like, the videos have always kind of, you know, try to focus on, at least a hint of positivity. And you know, I go to my favorite casinos, I go to my favorite bars. I try not to, you know, get, you know, tilt my face off in the videos, try and focus on the positives here and there. Obviously there's, some crappy things that happen in poker, but, you know, we're doing very well if we're able to play poker for a living in general, you know, compared to a lot of people in the world. So again, the vibe was mostly, you know, positive, and the word fit with the vibe of the videos. And, you know, I'm definitely not like a very good salesperson. I'm not really one who's like, you know, cold calling would be like my worst nightmare. So, you know, making sales is not really something I'm very good at, but when people ask for something before it even exists, then that's a pretty good bridge into selling that person something when they actually ask for it before it exists. So people were saying in the comments, you know, we're probably going to need a shirt here, a Favorable shirt. We need some t-shirts here. Let's get some Favorable t-shirts made up. So that was an easy step. All the designs, all the sourcing, everything about the, you know, the website and all the photography that's on there, it's all Boosie's work. Wow. And you know, it's, I might contribute, you know, 5%. What do you think about this design? Looks great to me. Looks awesome. Another banger there. So it's like, you know, all her creations, that, have stemmed out from this blog thing and this phrase that's caught on. And then off we went with a couple of t-shirts. Now we, you know, there's been a few designs from the t-shirts. There's, you know, we got these hats and the hoodies, and it's my favorite thing to see It's like, for sure, I think my favorite thing when I see someone randomly in the casino wearing the favorable apparel, for someone to show that support and wear it out in the day on themselves is the coolest thing that happens.
I love that story. It just stemmed naturally. And then you jumped on it with Boosie from a business perspective. And I get it, man. I mean, I can see you sitting in any random casino, seeing a favorable hat and just being like, that's great. It's almost like this physical, tangible thing to look at and say, all right, like this thing's real, right? You know, more than a video or a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Like these are all digital properties. This YouTube thing, it's like you summed it up pretty well. Having someone buy a tangible product and then wearing it on themselves to show their support is awesome.
That's great, Andrew. All right. So Andrew, we've talked about vlogs. We've talked about your podcast, right? We're talked about favorable. So what we haven't talked about yet are meetup games, or I feel like what you and maybe even Brad have really. So Andrew, we've talked about vlogs. We've talked about your podcast, right? We're talked about favorable. So what we haven't talked about yet are meetup games, or I feel like what you and maybe even Brad have really turned into the acronym MUG. Right.
That's
so,
right.
So when did this happen for you? Because I'll share a story with you. I'm literally in a business meeting for Faded Spade Cards in the Daytona Poker Room, and their operators are asking me about Andrew Niemi and his meetup games and if they should have you at the poker room. So like, obviously word is spreading, right? So talk to everybody about that. When did this come about? And just go ahead, because I know we're going to do, you know, another segment on it, but how did this whole mug thing come about for you?
Yeah. So the meetup games, originally we didn't have the actual name meetup. Well, we might've called them meetup games. We said, okay, so the WSOP was going on. This was a couple of years ago now. Obviously a time when the wait lists are super long for the cash games at the usual spots. Had built a great community via the YouTube videos. And my buddy Brad and I, we decided we would try and get some people together. And it's multi-purpose. It's multi-beneficial when we can produce a game that is, you know, from the start, we say, let's play some casual 2-5. We'll have a couple beers. And at the end of the night, we'll head over to the bar and hang out for an hour or two. When you frame it that way, you already have a game that's probably going to be less grindery, less of these headphones, more chatting, more social interaction, more beverages, and more straddling and more fun generally. It's something that we wanted to do to bring people together in person and get people face to face rather than just communicating via, you know, YouTube comments and DMs and things like that. And it's, you know, to be able to also, you know, drive some traffic into a poker room on an off night. You know, Wednesday is when we usually hold these games, Tuesday or Wednesday. And then the people can also be a part of the content themselves, the content creation that they love to watch. So we're going to have the cameras as well. They can help us make a vlog. Decent chance they might end up in the vlog. You know, we're going to play some hands together and then we're going to hang out at the bar afterwards. So it's sort of like a nod to, you know, the other side of poker. In the videos, there's so much hand discussions, hand breakdowns, the things that a professional poker is thinking about as they approach a session, you know, results, all the things that a pro poker player needs to be focusing on. And the meetup games are a nod to the other section of poker, the entire poker world that the rest of the people like to approach poker as. Sure, everyone's trying to win when they come to the games, but you know, there's going to be a lot of fun that's had, and that's, you know, winning might not even be the main focus of the game. Poker sort of needs it needs that side of the game to exist for professionals to be able to do what they do. So that's the sort of basis of the games.
I agree, man. I know we're going to talk about it in the next segment, but Sean's a big fan. I'm a big fan. And I feel like the more this grows, the better it is for poker, because I think you hit the nail on the head. It's earlier in the interview where you were like, it's very hard for people to relate to these nosebleed high stakes cash games, right? But the majority of our industry and players, it's really, it's the home game players. It's the 1-3, it's the 2-5. And I would say that is the majority of our industry, and you're appealing to it, and you're bringing them in a way that nobody really has. So your vision for Mugs, man, like where it is and where you want it to go, like, are you hoping this becomes kind of travel around the country, travel around the world, and really organize these types of events?
Yeah, man, it's already a travel around the country thing for sure. It's we just got back from a couple trips. We were in Florida, the Isle Casino in Pompano Beach. We got 15 tables of 3-5 players together at Maryland Live. This was our second visit up there. We got 21 tables of 3-5 players together, which is just mind boggling to think that you can get 21 tables of people. And in Chicago, our first Midwest stop, we were at the Chicago Charitable Games. We got 22 tables of 1-3. So it's just absurd numbers to think about. If I, you know, some of these things in YouTube land, you know, you think about the numbers of people that are watching these videos, and then numbers of people getting together. If you sit and think too long, you might freak yourself out.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No worries. Just keep plugging away at these different things, and yeah, we're looking to go bring the meetup game brand all over the place, really.
So that was one of my questions for you. Like I was going to ask you, like, what's it like right now when you think back to like your first 10 subscribers on YouTube, right? And now you look at your channel and you're like, oh God, there's 125,000. Or when you probably had your first mug, you know what, maybe you had a couple of tables, right? And now you're getting 21. So it's like, what's it like when you just stop and think about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I should or shouldn't. I think it's important. I think it's like, you know, what's the point of doing all these things if you don't sort of take time and appreciate all that stuff? For the most part, I don't. Like, I think, I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing, but I'm sort of like always thinking about the next day, the next video, the next, you know, sorting out the next trip, getting through these emails to plan the next round of meetup games. And then, you know, the editing, there's just so many different things that it's always the next thing on the plate. But then, yeah, every time I look back at like some videos and stuff, or, even the other day, Instagram, you know, has the archive of all your stories. And I was like looking through a trip to Mexico that Boosie and I took. And it was like refreshing to like stop and think back about some things for once and just chill out and appreciate all that stuff. And it's really cool every time I do that. But it seems like the train is always just kind of moving. And, you know, the time to stop and think about them is kind of small.
I'm smirking because that was a very similar answer to what I gave and Berkey and Jamie to that. And it's been consistent with the folks we've had on so far. Like, it's really tough to celebrate the successes, right? Because you're trying to move forward, and then you're a lot of times just trying to put out issues, or you're just trying to figure out like if there were problems and trials, how to get past them, right? Would you agree with that?
For sure. Yeah. There's always something you're always trying to figure out, and you're just always, you know, focused on the next step. Again, yeah, I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, I think it's good. You sort of have to be in that sense most of the time, at least, if you want to really experience growth. You know, it can be a competitive world out there, and you got to kind of bear down and keep it going and keep firing away. But, it can't be unhealthy to slow down a little bit and, you know, appreciate the things that you've accomplished.
Amen. I think we all need to do it a little more, you know?
Yeah, probably.
So we'll do another few minutes here with the interview, Andrew, but so talk to folks over this journey of yours, right? There had to be times where you've had some trials, or there had to be some hard times where you've questioned, should I keep doing this? Do I want to keep doing this? Or just bad shit happened, right? In terms of your business growth and your entrepreneurial growth. So do you recall like a moment over the last few years, separate from the poker playing for those years, but since you really transitioned into this entrepreneurial outside of poker, you know, all your ventures, do you remember like a time when like it just got hard and you were wondering, do I keep doing this? And what advice would you have for people kind of going through that in their journey?
For sure. Like, you know, the, as far as like a YouTube video creator, the biggest grind is the editing that goes along with this whole thing. And it's, you know, nobody sees that stuff and really gets how much time and effort goes into that. It's a whole nother grind. You know, you're chained to the desk. These videos take, you know, 10, 12, 16 hours to edit. And that's after you've played a whole poker session and, you know, shot everything, talked about all these hands into the camera. Then you got to, you know, sit down and you just sort of have to stop. You know, you can't go out and this poker players, we have sort of this sort of immediate gratification thing, especially cash game players where, you know, you're there, you're sitting at the table, you are grinding that hourly. There's money coming into your stack. You know, when you're sitting there editing, it's a much slower, drawn out process. And then, you know, even the YouTube revenue, it's not going to be super substantial itself. So it could be a grind for sure. And then you start questioning, I don't know, am I doing this right? Am I going about this the right way? Should I have an editor? Will the videos lose some of their personality if we do that? All these questions. You know, I haven't had the sort of this existential crisis, so to speak, from making the videos that I definitely had as a poker player, and you know, pretty much every poker player has.
Yeah.
You know, is poker right for me? Since I made the videos, it's sort of like opened up a pretty big world, like mentally. You know, it's like, well, even if poker videos end up not being the thing that I do forever, you know, we've discovered that we can utilize these platforms that are out there. To reach people all over the world. It's like the most perfect distribution platform there is. It's free. And you know, it got me out of just doing the solo focus grind thing. And you know, you can take that in endless directions. So yeah, for sure there's questions about whether I'll, you know, continue to make videos where I'm talking about hands at 2-5 no limit games and stuff like that. But it's you know, I don't think those questions will ever go away. You're always asking yourself, am I on the right path? Am I doing the right thing? And et cetera. But, it's been good. It's been cool to, you know, sort of open your mind to all these different possibilities.
100%, man. So, all right. So I think we mentioned obviously your YouTube vlogs, right? And then your podcast and Favorable and Mugs. Anything else that you've got going on that I'm leaving out that is like part of your entrepreneurial game right now?
We got the Hand History Lounge, Tom.
Yeah, the Hand History Lounge. Come on, man.
The Hand History Lounge. My buddy Benton Blakeman and I. Benton, fantastic poker player, better poker player than I am. Winner up to 10-20, no limit. And also just like an all-around great guy who can communicate his thought process when it comes to poker very well. So it's basically an extension. Earlier in the interview, I mentioned the text message group that was pretty beneficial, actually. Entirely beneficial and sort of game changing for me, where it was just talking about hands nonstop with friends who are sort of on the same grind. This is the same. It's you know, you might want to call it a training site, might not. It's, you know, it's different. It's not just sitting there watching videos. You post your hands, Benton or myself will, mainly Benton, we will give direct feedback and answer unlimited questions that you have about hands and the way that you played them and your thought process and their approach to poker.
Love it, man. How can people get involved?
Handhistorylounge.com. That's where you'll find it. And you can get a free week. You know, that's if you money back. If you're in there for a week, you think this thing sucks, you spend no money, you get your money back and we go our separate ways.
It almost sounds like you're creating a whole sense of community, right?
Yeah, I would say that. You know, the other thing, one of the reasons the videos took off was because these are, again, games that the most people, the biggest portion of the poker playing audience, the games that they're playing, but it's also hands that are being broken down from like a actual professional poker player. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people didn't have access to that before the videos, you know, especially not for the games that they were playing. So they, you know, they were able to understand the way a hand is supposed to be broken down rather than just sending it to a friend and saying, oh, that was unlucky. You got unlucky, you know?
So never done that.
Yeah. So dissecting different aspects of the hand, and then, the Hand History Lounge is, you know, for people who really want to, improve their win rate.
Awesome, Andrew. All right. And then where do you go from here, man? The next few years, like what's your vision for building your personal brand? What's your vision for, just everything and anything you're doing? Where do you kind of like want to take your personal brand and businesses from here?
Yep, that is the question. It's a good question. I'm not sure I have the answer, but there's definitely growth is the focus in you know all different areas. I want to play higher stakes. I want to take the meetup games to you know other continents. We haven't been to Europe yet. Need to make that happen. Australia would be awesome. Growth in all directions. The you know, I'm not sure how big the subscriber count can get to if we're making videos that are going in depth in poker hands. But you know, we see some other channels like Doug and Daniel and the Poker Stars channel. Those are all bigger than mine. So there's definitely more growth available. And you know, outside of poker, it remains to be seen. I would love to open up a bar here in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. That's always been a thought.
The favorable bar.
It could be the favorable bar. It could be mugs. That works too. <right. laughs> So who knows? It remains to be seen, but there would definitely be content creation, about whatever direction we head.
I love it. And I know that's a kind of on the spot question, but I always ask it because it just makes people think, right? And when people ask that of me, I've always reflected on those answers. So, all right, last but not least, if there's one thing, Andrew, that you want like aspiring entrepreneurs to know about their journey and what to expect, what would it be?
It's never as terrifying as you think it is before you start. You always just kind of need to just flip that switch into having started, you know, from not having started yet. Mm-hmm. And there was, like I said, months of pondering about whether I should start this video thing. And again, like I said, I had a podcast before I did any of this stuff that none of you guys know about and nobody knows about. And it's not like the end of the world that we didn't, grow a massive audience out of that podcast. So if that's not a big deal, what happens if this video thing wasn't a big deal? I would try and come up with another idea. Sitting around and pondering it doesn't really get it done. What does lead to growth and figuring things out in life is just trying it and just starting.
Amen. And listeners of the Fate of Spade podcast, you're hearing this from Andrew. You've heard this from our other past guests. Stop thinking, start doing, right?
Yep.
Start doing. That's the way to do it. So, all right, Andrew, where can people find your vlogs, your podcasts, your apparel, you name it? Where can people connect with you and your businesses and brands?
The YouTube channel is kind of the main hub for everything. It's youtube.com/AndrewNeamy. Twitter is the same. We've got an Instagram page. I'm sure you can find that. The favorable gear, favorableapparel.com. All pretty straightforward links. The podcast is Tells Podcast. You can find that either on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or tellspodcast.com.
There we go, man. Andrew, I want to thank you for coming on the Faded Spade podcast for the interview segment, Founder Hour. Sean and I always say, even if one person watching gets inspired or finds direction or can relate, we feel like that's a big win. You know?
For sure.
So yep. I want to thank you for coming on, man, and devoting your time to it.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thanks, Andrew. So that's going to be a wrap on the Founder Hour segment of Faded Spade podcast. We will be right back with an on-the-clock segment about mugs, where they are and where they can go in our industry.
On the clock.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Faded Spade podcast. We are here for a special on the clock segment with Andrew Neamy, with Sean McCormick, the poker boss, and myself, Tom Wheaton, founder and CEO of Faded Spade. And today's topic is mugs or meetup games, right? So we know this is a passion of Andrew's. We're going to try and do a few things here. So we're going to talk about like the importance and value of mugs from like an operator perspective and a poker room perspective, also from a player perspective, and then, you know, from an organizer perspective. And we'll kind of talk about the current state, and then also where we think it could go into the future. And with these on-the-clock opinion segments, after you watch it or listen to it, feel free to interact with us, you know, on Twitter and get in the discussion about mugs. So, Andrew, where can people reach you on Twitter?
Andrew Neamy.
There it is. Very easy. Sean?
At the Poker Boss.
At the Poker Boss, apparently. Not at Poker Boss. And then I'm at Tom Wheaton _ really boring. So, all right, guys. So let's get into it. So Mugs, Meetup Games. Andrew is one of the leaders in this entire initiative. So, you know, Sean, I'm going to start with you from an operator perspective. You know, this has kind of exploded on the scene, right? And talk to us about your opinion from an operator perspective in terms of the value Mugs bring to a poker room or a casino and the industry, you know, at large.
Perfect. Thanks, Tom. Yeah. Before we even get into it, let me just say, Andrew, huge fan. Huge fan. This guy has been all over the map in such a fast, you came on really fast and really quick. Although we talked about people don't see a lot of the work behind the scenes to get where you are now. I mean, you got the Video Blogger of the Year Award in 2017, the Poker Personality of the Year Award in 2017. You won Vlogger of the Year again in 2018. It's pretty incredible, and people really need to realize that what you're doing is pretty amazing work, man. And you're definitely capturing a vast audience in such a small world. So just first and foremost, thanks for everything you do. When it comes to Meetup Games, I'm a huge fan. We have, where I work at Aria, we've had some tough goes with everybody like getting on board with it. You know, I work in the corporate world, so it's not like the Poker Boss can just like flip a switch and, approve everything myself. I'd love to say that it's the Aria Poker Boss poker room, but that's not how it works. But there's definitely a ton of value to Meetup Games. And we're not just talking from a rake or ROI perspective on these games being formed, but they bring in like a new audience. They bring in someone, they make someone more aware of your business, not just the Andrew Nemes or the Brad Owens, stuff like that. They're like, oh, wow, let me go play here. Let me go play there. We've tried it a little bit at Aria, and I look forward to doing more with it because I am a fan. And actually, I think our next meetup game should be Pros versus Trolls. Oh, let's get these trolls out here, baby. Let's get these trolls out here.
So here's the thing. I was wondering when you were going to break out like your paper with some marker on it, because you're at every single, Faded Spade podcast.
This is high quality production here.
Yes, sir.
After the intro, Andrew, it all goes downhill. So.
No, but like I said, I'm a serious fan, and I think this is the future. I'd like to see more of it, and not just more from the big names like Johnny and Brad and Andrew and them. I want to see more people take a stab at this, and it's trial and error, obviously, between the player and the operator. And I just want to see more of it. I get involved myself on a much smaller scale, joining games that are set up, not so much meetup games where people are doing analysis of hands and stuff like that. But I play on like Twitch games and stuff like that. You know, I'll go to Stones frequently. They'll say, hey, we're going to do, Veronica and Friends, or, Mike Possel and I forgot what the name of his show is, but he wins every time, so it doesn't really matter. I'm a fan of getting people together to make an entertaining night of not just poker, but talking and chatting about all facets of gaming, sports, life, and all that. And I'm a fan of,
It's interesting. I think that, No offense, but I don't think there's been a whole lot of creativity in poker rooms, over a pretty long stretch of time. You know, there's things that a lot of different poker rooms do. They do high hand bonuses. They do bad beat jackpots. They do, people who play the most hours will be entered into a free roll, or, things like that. And people dig those. That's fine. That's cool. It maybe needed a little bit of refreshing, as far as things that are new and interesting in a brick and mortar poker room. And normally, these poker rooms, Sean's usually not there in a NASA t-shirt and a red cap. He's wearing a suit, and there's another person or two people at the podium at the front of the poker room wearing suits. And it can be a little bit intimidating. It's like kind of quiet in there compared to the rest of the casino. And it's, you know, you hear that word a lot from people who don't play live poker, have never played live poker. The poker room is pretty intimidating when they see it, when they walk past it. So for these meetup games, it's the list of benefits goes on and on. The casino is able to outsource the promotion of the room to other people that have built a community. The vibe of the game is, from the outset, it's something that's built around a social night rather than we're all going to go in there and, you know, try and win money from each other and put these headphones on and not do a lot of talking. And then we're going to decompress afterwards. We're going to have a beer after the game is over at the nearby casino bar. So again, the casino benefits from people moving from one area of the casino to the next. If it's somebody who's a content creator, they get to capture all that stuff and, you know, distribute it, which again is a little bit of a hang up for a lot of these corporate rooms because it's out of their hands as far as the production thing and the portrayal of the brand, which is, I know, very important. But, you know, through patience, we've definitely seen some casinos come around and embrace this thing, even on the corporate side. It works out really well. Whenever you have a project that works well for all the different entities involved, Brad Owen, my co-host, and myself, we travel around to these different places. We get help with the travel costs and all those things. And we get face to face with all the people who get all these games built in their local room. Obviously the casino benefits as well. So it's a win for everybody.
As you should get those travel, you know, costs paid for, right? Or at least some help with. And here's my opinion on it. So from a value proposition standpoint, right? I think for a casino or a poker room, like, why wouldn't you want to host one of these? Like, not only is it going to bring in people maybe who have never been to your poker room or casino, but the word you said was intimidating. And you're right. Like, God, I play a home game, but I also play 1-3-2-5, dabble in some 5-10. And all these guys at the home game have never really been in a poker room. And they've all said, it's just, I wouldn't even know where to start, right? Mm. So like, the option is I go sit with them at a 1-2 table or 1-3 table and try and teach them the ropes to make them feel comfortable, right? Or you have this type of organized, fun, social meetup game atmosphere where people feel comfortable. And I think that's a big value prop to a poker room or casino. Like, you're going to be able to get new people who maybe could never have stepped into or maybe not have known of your poker room. And who knows if maybe they're there just for the night, maybe they become a regular, but I think that's a huge value proposition, Andrew. And I think it's one that more and more poker rooms and casinos are going to start realizing, right? Because it's so kind of still in its infancy. From a player, yeah. Go ahead. What are your thoughts on that?
Just going to say it's something that takes patience. It took a lot of patience, a couple of years of trying to, you know, explain the like you said, the value proposition. And even though poker room managers, like Sean and some of the other guys, we never heard anything bad, about, you know, the idea or about, you know, my YouTube channel from poker room managers. It's just the corporate world, especially in the casino industry, is just very slow to adopt different things like this. Social media has been slow to really been grasped. And I think still there's very slow to be grasped by a lot of different casino companies, not just YouTube, but like all the usual channels. And then, of course, bringing a camera into the casino has always been, an immediate no-no. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, even though poker room managers, they understood the value right away, they have to run it up the chain. And that's why we had to start at some independent rooms in places like Texas, where there's, you know, these membership clubs, and it's, you know, same sort of games being run there, and just show what's possible, and then present that to some different companies, and eventually those doors will open.
Cool. So you mentioned like content creation, right? Bringing video in. So Sean, I imagine that takes certain approvals, right? Maybe it takes approval from a state gaming standpoint. Maybe it takes approval, you know, in your poker room compared to others of higher ups and folks who maybe aren't even educated on poker as much as all of us. So that's a potential barrier, right? To the locations you can do it on. And every business has barriers and every business has to overcome barriers. So Sean, what can you say from like an operator perspective or gaming perspective where there are certain hurdles that have to kind of be either education or just an understanding, certain hurdles that has to be overcome so that isn't a barrier. Like, what is that like for you if you were to try and make something like this happen with Andrew, you know, at your establishment?
So first and foremost, player privacy is always going to be number one. And yes, for the most part, players coming in for a meetup game know what they're getting into. So, you know, there were a lot of hurdles. I mean, I've been at ARIA for 4 years now. God, Andrew, how long ago was it that me, you, and Boosie had lunch? I mean, that feels like 2 years ago now. And about 3 months ago, I finally made these signs that says, you know, you're walking into a filming area. If you're in here, your presence, your likeness can be used. And basically, they're for meetup games. And I haven't got to use them yet. So Brad's kind of excited that we finally made these. And I know our sister property, Bellagio, has taken these out too. And we're really excited to get on board. But these things take time. And like Andrew said, we have to run these things up the chain, especially in the corporate world. And to be honest, I've been in the corporate poker realm now for almost 15 years. And it's really tough because generally poker room managers, bosses are like vice presidents of table games or something in marketing or something like that. And they don't really know poker. They compare a lot of things to blackjack and craps and Bach and stuff like that, which is a bananas comparison because the games aren't anything like each other. You know, playing a social game amongst people that you're winning money off of versus playing against the house is completely different, as we all know. So there's definitely a lot of hurdles and roadblocks when saying, we want to do this in poker. And they're like, well, we would never do this in the pit. And I'm like, of course you wouldn't do this in the pit. So it's more about educating. And I think as Andrew, Brad, and everybody else tries these meetup games more and more, that education is going to happen as more content comes out. You know, I can go to my boss now and say, hey, look at this. Andrew's got a video online that has 403,000 views. Yes, that is your most viewed video. I already Googled you. So when you're seeing me look off camera, that's totally what I'm doing. I'm just researching all things Andrew. But, you know, I can show my bosses and say, hey, look at this. You know, they're doing these things. And not only is Andrew getting followers, but that casino, that poker room is getting followers and stuff like that. So I think we're finally breaking through that wall of the ignorance that there is surrounding these meetup games and videoing on the floor, and everybody's starting to embrace it. We're a little bit lucky here in Nevada where regulations are a little bit looser than some other places. So like, if Andrew called me today and said, Sean, I want to do a meetup game at 5, I could put a sign out at 5:30, you know, or 4:30 that says, we're about to start filming and we're done. And that's not the case everywhere. Tom, you've ran into roadblocks doing state regulations in certain states just trying to get cards sold. So you know how hard it is. And now that we're at this point, and I'm hoping when I get off the podcast and everything that Andrew and I talk a little bit and try to do something at ARIA, I'm really looking forward to it.
That's cool. So hearing that, Andrew, have you dealt with that directly, gaming issues or operator hangups because of lack of education? And is that something you're still kind of fighting through?
Yes, he has at ARIA. I literally told him, you know, I can't do this yet. Come on, Tom. I mean, you just point the finger right at me.
That wasn't a setup, to be honest with you. I think, you know, if I was really swinging for the fences, I'd have been like, remember a few months ago, you came out with that damn statement on Twitter and people took it wrong. And so,
yeah. So 100%, you know, it's not just the meetup games. It's this, you know, the basis of the channel has always been capturing some things that weren't typically captured. And I just, you know, sort of did it anyway and didn't really ask for permission. And I know that's not Sean's preferred method, but I did it anyway. And I think it's, you know, it's worked out okay. You know, I don't think anyone's gotten too upset or bothered by the whole thing these years later. And, you know, I've been asked not to do that in a couple of different casinos. Sean's is one of them, the Wynn and the Bellagio. But, you know, it seems like it seems like the conversation is slowly but surely moving. It's great now that, as Sean mentioned, he's ready to go at the meetup game. He's got the sign, which is very important. And it's for sure just a matter of time. Like, you know, we saw as soon as we did the first one, we knew that there was value there. We see the channels, the poker channels continue to grow. So there's obviously value there. And it just takes time for some people to come around to the idea and get past the tradition of saying no to a camera. I just saw that the Stratosphere Casino, one of their things that they've been doing lately is they put on the felts, on the gaming tables in the pit, something like, it's like a hashtag selfie shot or hashtag something that's like encouraging people to take a photo of like a big winning hand or something like that. So it's completely the opposite direction and literally encouraging people to take photos in the pit and share them on social media. So again, slowly but surely, these things are going to come around and it's just going to take some patience and continuing to show the value of them all.
Well, damn it. Like, let's do this. I mean, come on. We need the Andrew Nemi, Brad Owen, Aria meetup game, playing with faded spade cards. Like, what the hell are we waiting for?
You gotta make sure you work that in with the faded spade cards. You gotta work that in.
Gotta work that in. Come on, man. 100%. So, okay. So I'm in agreement with you guys. Like, I believe this is really important for another reason too, though. I think it's really important to bridge live and digital poker. Right. And I think like the more we can bridge live poker and what people are consuming online, like the more powerful it is for the industry, the more people will feel comfortable entering the game. Right. Because people, like we talked about, people aren't always that comfortable entering the game. So, you know, Sean, from your perspective, do you believe this is going to become a new standard? Right. In the poker world? And what would you say to other operators who are running into some of the same roadblocks that you did?
That's a good one. You know, I don't want to speak for anybody because, again, the jurisdiction I live in is a lot more lenient. So I know that there are a lot of roadblocks for this. But I will tell people that if you have the opportunity, embrace this. And I totally get it. You know, I started in poker in 2003, so I kind of a semi-veteran of the game, at least. And it's changed a lot. I mean, I know back then you couldn't even pull a cell phone out in the sports book. Never mind, like, make a phone call, take video, do FaceTime, and all that stuff. So we've come a long way, but the casino industry is one that moves at definitely a slower pace than most. I'm very shocked to hear about the Stratosphere and those felts. That's very interesting. I'm actually want to check that out myself because the pit is still a place where they tell you not to pull out the phone and stuff like that. And it's more about the casino protecting their image and maybe even potential cheats. It's really hard to cheat the casino these days. It's getting really hard with the technology, the way we're, you know, shufflers and all this stuff. But, you know, the casino still has an old school view about a lot of things when it comes to technology. I know we weren't even allowing employees to have Apple Watches when they first came out, but what was the danger there? You know what I mean? And that's gone by the wayside already because it's just like, there's only so much you can control. And if you look at now, if people are walking through casinos, even Aria, with a cell phone in their hand, you don't see security stopping them like they used to say, hey, you can't film. Now, if they have the camera turned the other way and they're filming people in the poker room, people at slots, people at table games, absolutely we will tell them to, again, because player privacy is number one. That's paramount for us. The worst thing that could ever happen is, especially in poker where the community is small, a guy, and I don't want to make an excuse for a guy or a girl here to do anything, you know, not nefarious, but say, hey, I was at the library and then, you know, someone videoed them and now they're on Twitter and their wife's like, wait a minute, you were playing poker at Aria. So we try to contain it. But at the same time, people have to realize if you're in the public realm now, you're being videoed by someone at all times. So just act accordingly and, you know, don't lie to your spouse about where you are. But yeah, like I said, I'm really happy that we've taken the turn. And for other operators, I would say definitely embrace this because if you don't, your competitor will.
Ooh, very good statement. I like that. If you're not embracing mugs, if you're not working with Andrew Nemi, getting your poker room full on a Tuesday night with 21 tables, your competitor down the road just might do that. I like that. All right, Andrew. So as we kind of round out this segment, what's your why? What's your why with these mugs? Like, what do you really, what's really driving you with your entire initiative to spread meetup games around the globe, like you said before?
Yeah. Again, when you can work on a project, create a project, do something, be involved in something where it's like the perfect circle of benefiting everybody, then it's kind of like a no-brainer. And it's especially if it's something that's not being done, that hasn't started yet or isn't as proliferate as it maybe could be or should be. That's definitely something that you want to be a part of. So again, if you look at all three different components of the meetup gains, the casino, it's very obvious how they benefit. We drive a bunch of traffic into the room, and then we have at the end of the day, after the event, we have the perfect marketing vehicle for a poker room or a casino. We have this YouTube video that we put a lot of care into producing, and it's being watched by the exact target market that a casino is trying to get their attention. And it's not produced, it's not an ad. It's not something that they created. It's created by somebody who is already has a trust factor with their audience. So again, it's a total no-brainer for the property. For the attendees, you know, we try and make these a very fun night. We've heard from people say that this is the most fun they've had playing poker in a long time or ever, which is probably the most encouraging feedback that you can get. We can interact, you know, we can ask your favorite creator questions, as many questions, whatever question you want to ask us. You know, we can just have a really fun time, and they can help us be creators. They can be a part of the content creation themselves. People seem to get a kick out of that. And they also get, you know, all these games, like I said, 15 3-5 games at a certain location. That's kind of a dream for like a 3-5 no limit player. You want to have all this table selection available. Mm. And they're usually decently active games. And then of course for us, we get travel covered. There's a rate sometimes for these games, and the content gets produced in a new sort of fashion that, you know, it provides for some new variables. You know, it's not just me going to the Bellagio every day, grinding the 510. We get to travel, go to some new places, and you know, what's not to enjoy about traveling and meeting up with, you know, 15 tables of your people in your community. So again, everyone wins in the end. And when there's that sort of a perfect circle of benefits, then I think it's kind of a no-brainer.
100%. Couldn't agree more. All right. So we're going to bring this on the clock segment about meetup games, mugs to a close. And we're going to close with this. Anyone that's listening or watching this podcast, if you're a Faded Spade Card Poker Room customer, if you're a Faded Spade Card home game customer, you know, get in touch with Andrew. Let's get these meetup games happening in as many states as possible around the country, around the globe. Let's embrace it. It's great for the industry. Nobody does it better than Andrew. Let's just wrap our arms around this meetup game entire initiative, because it's great for the game. It's great for players. It's great for poker. And here's my commitment. Anybody that chooses to work with Andrew over the next few months until the end of the year to do a meetup game, our team will personally send you some Faded Spade cards to use during the meetup game on us, on the house, just for the heck of it. So if all the value propositions that Andrew talked about weren't enough, we'll throw one more on top, just because I know the three of us really believe in the meetup game initiative and want to see it grow even more. All right. So we just finished up a great Founder Hour interview on the Faded Spade podcast with Andrew Niemi. And then I thought a really, really great segment on mugs, meetup games after that. So Sean, what'd you think about this entire episode with Andrew Niemi as our guest?
You know, I love the whole meetup game, you know, like the idea behind it. And I think it's really, really cool what Andrew and, you know, his good buddy, Brad Owens and a couple others have attempted to do. You know, obviously it's a win-win for poker rooms. And as an operator, I think it's amazing and just draws people in. And Andrew had some awesome insight into his own world, you know, like things he does, like his own Tells podcast with his wife, which is an awesome one. I highly recommend it. I've listened to a few myself. And just his journey has been pretty cool. You know, I always think it's great when a guy, you know, someone attempts to go for something, but it wasn't really what they were attempting to do. Like this all came together organically. It wasn't like he thought, I'm going to do this. I'm going to become a YouTube channel sensation and people are going to watch my my videos. He just did it, which is really cool, which is kind of like what we're doing. You know, you got to have no reason. We're just going for this, guys. So, no, Andrew had some amazing insight, and I highly recommend not only following his channel, subscribing and all that good stuff, but meeting him. He's a down-to-earth guy. Hop into one of those meetup games, and I've been to a few myself, and it's pretty cool how they hop around to all the tables. Like they don't set up these games and they're just focus and play poker. They make it really fun and engaging and entertaining for everybody that's there.
Yeah, man. They're really player centric and attendee centric. And I loved how, like, he was in the music business, right? I mean, went to college, graduated, got into the music business, went that whole path, and then was like, well, this poker thing online and then live, like, is really profitable. I'm just going to do this. I think he said like 8 years he was doing it before he even jumped into the whole YouTube deal. And even had a podcast he did that nobody even knows about, right? That he told our listeners about. So I really like Andrew. I really like getting to know him more on this podcast. I like getting to know him at Run It Up. I think down to earth is a great word. I don't think he truly realizes that he's become an influencer that he has in the industry. I don't know that he realizes that, you know, and just awesome interview. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. Favorable clothing. Definitely check that out from Andrew Neamy. Follow him on Twitter and YouTube. It's all his name, Andrew Neamy. You guys will be entertained. You'll learn something. And hope you guys enjoyed another episode of the Fade & Spade podcast that you can find on YouTube for video and across all major podcast platforms. So here we go, Sean, wrapping up another episode of the Faded Spade Podcast.
Yes, sir.
The Faded Spade Podcast is sponsored by Duck Duck Productions. Contact them for all of your podcast editing needs at randy@duckduckpro.com. Upgrade to Faded Spade and get 15% off the new face of cards with code PODCAST at fadedspade.com.